Right, so let's see if we can go without something going wrong this time besides the show.
Well, first, do we want to just go through news real quick?
News.
News?
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 News.
This is Star
Oh.
Trek. There is no news. There's not.
Well, more for Power Rangers stuff.
Wrong show, Fort Max.
Because we have a start date.
Fort Max, this isn't Superhero Time. This is Superhero Time presents that one episode of Star Trek.
Right.
Right. There's a difference.
What's the start date? I want to know.
The 28th of August.
Okay, thank
29th.
You.
29th? I thought
now
it
I'm
was 29th.
confused and frightened.
Wait, which one's a Saturday? That'll settle it.
It's usually after Friday.
The 29th.
Yeah. Okay. So it comes back on the 29th.
Yes.
Yep.
When did Die Ranger come out?
We don't know yet.
Oh, yeah, there's also that.
We
that
just.
Was...
That was a troll. I mean.
Yep.
Well, we were waiting for someone to ask. What if no one asked? Now, admittedly, Power Rangers fans being what they are, that was never
They're
a possibility. Right.
Yes, right.
It's like being at BotCon and expecting
Don
not
to stand
ask
up.
About Headmaster RC.
He didn't this
yeah.
year. This year he
I
stood
think...
up and gave Sue Blue an RC.
Yeah, I think, and I know nobody else here cares about this, but I think they had something similar happen like with the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panel, and somebody asked a question that they immediately threw to a video. I'm like, but, oh, this, they're Marvel fans. They would have asked anyway.
I'm sure they have some kind of backup plan to bring that stuff in.
Just throw it in at the end of the panel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they have to.
But they know better.
And how
I mean,
about that scattershot?
It's almost like you guys don't want to talk about these episodes.
No, we do. We're just getting rid of the pre-show stuff that we've had to delay since you took forever.
We're going to be here all night.
That's your punishment for taking forever. All right, start the show.
Well, technically, we already had.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
Well, start it over again. That beginning is bullshit.
Let's see if the recorder crashes again. That would serve you guys right.
Podcasts, the final frontier. These are the audio logs of the podcast Superhero Time. Their 5-month mission? Explore old episodes of Star Trek, alienate even more listeners, and boldly plow your mom where no one has come before.
With XV.
Yeah, Kira in the library with the candlestick. I think you were just getting to that.
Hey, Mickey.
It's a fabulously shiny murder machine, powered by Romulans.
Ken.
This gooey mass of yellow that does not quite do what you want it to.
And Fort Max.
I'm guessing it's Ken. That's where all the weird noises have been coming from today.
Damn. All right, so time to start the show. And then Ken put something in the Skype chat to distract us more. Face paint McGillicuddy, okay.
And Will Smith asks, what has my career become?
You know, I'm just going to go ahead and say Captain Trenchcoat. That's not an objectively worse name than Captain Boomerang.
It's not.
Like, it's not better, but no, it's not objectively worse than Captain Boomerang.
Dead by the end of the first act. Lady never bathes.
I still think the one costume they spent money on is because they bought the old Goomba costume from the Mario Brothers movie.
Oh my god, it's not just me!
Wait, that's not what that is?
I was like, why does Killer Croc look like a Goomba?
That's Killer Croc?
It's Killer Croc!
Oh.
Yeah! That's Killer Croc.
It's hard to tell because he's not holding any rocks to hit people with.
See, now if somebody knew what they were doing making a DC movie and they were using Killer Croc, there would not be a scene where he's not holding, like, a boulder of some measure.
Or even just a rock in his hand, you know, just playing with it or something like that. Then he just upgrades to progressively bigger and bigger rocks until he just has a really big one.
and then Batman shows up for a 30-second cameo
so he can
to dodge the rock, yes.
Yes!
Like, there's not even no line. You can't even see, like, the bottom half of Batman's face. He's just there in silhouette.
Uh-huh. Batman!
Aww.
See, we can make a better Suicide Squad movie than them.
We can make a better any DC movie than they are.
I think anybody could, actually.
Right, so, for the third time now, it's that one episode of Star Trek. In fact, it's not even that one episode of Star Trek, it's those two episodes of Star Trek. See, Mickey, your idea to do two episodes to actually ruin the show. Because the title is now a lie.
I do what I can.
Perhaps for this week's episode, I will actually call it Those Two Episodes of Star Trek. Superhero Time presents Those Two Episodes of Star Trek, the animated series.
Wait, Superhero Time is the animated series or Star Trek is? This is going to require a careful colon.
I don't want to see how people would draw us.
Mickey, a lot of things in your life require a careful colon.
Oh.
That's the setup.
Happy to oblige, I guess. Anyway, so, what's new?
Star Trek? No, that's never new.
And certainly not these episodes.
All right, so which one are we doing first?
Well, just do them in, like, broadcast order.
Sure.
So we're going to do the interesting one first?
I guess we could do the weird one first. Or do I need to be more specific?
When I fell asleep during first.
All right, well, that's our cue. Ken, you're up on that one.
Oh, fuck.
For the record, Ken has become our new paladin. At least until the real one comes back.
I've decided on this week's episode title for the show, though. Crisis on Infinite Spock.
If we had podcast specific episode titles, I would totally use that.
Well, start.
We have, didn't we?
Not on this show.
Well, guess what? Need to start.
Well, maybe I can make it work. Because that's pretty good.
Didn't Giga Beetle start it?
That was the other
having...
show, Fort Max, listen. There is Superhero Time, which is on hiatus right now, and there's Superhero Time Presents, that one episode of Star Trek, which is a different podcast with mostly the same people on it.
Okay, so we start, and you know, actually the Enterprise for a show from 1973, art looks pretty good on it.
Ah, well, it's very easy to do that when you only make 5 frames and just reuse them again and again.
Well, see, that's what happens
when
I only watch 2 episodes.
See, Filmation was actually way, way ahead of their time because they had adopted the principles of Flash animation like 20 years ahead of time.
It does kind of favor that, doesn't it?
Yeah, and like...
And they would just, on different series, they would oftentimes just trace the animation, but use the different character models.
Right, like, I was waiting...
I also give credit that, you know, the restoration on the series is actually really good.
I was waiting the whole time, just like, okay, when does Brave Star show up?
Brave Star!
Thank you, that was a setup.
That would have made this episode so much more entertaining. And just here's the thing that throws me on this. It's not the matter of the... It's a little bit of a matter of the animation, but it's all the same actors. But...
Without the facial expressions to really bring their lines to life?
Yeah, there's no emotion. There's, like, zero emotion, which works in the second episode because reasons. But... and like, it's just like you can see mentally picture Shatner just sitting there reading the lines.
Okay, and like notice Shatner's lines have a very different quality to them.
Yeah, he sounds.
It is more classic. It is more Shatner.
No, that's not what I mean. Like the way they were recorded sounds different than the rest of the cast.
He sounds like he literally phoned it in.
Right.
Yeah, like over an actual telephone.
Yeah.
Yes, in 1973.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
Uh-huh.
The thing, too, is, like, you can tell from this that, you know, none of these people were voice actors.
No. Now, the one person who does the best is Nimoy. But...
But Spock kind of lends
Spock
to that.
Also, he does lend to that, yes.
Yeah.
But, And even, like, you know, when they try to emote, it's just kind of...
The animation does not help them emote.
No, because it doesn't do anything.
It goes counter to whatever their voices are doing.
Correct. So instead, both of them just kind of just read the lines. And it's not very engaging. Now, the actual story is interesting.
Yes.
If I could have read it as a book, I think I would have been more engaged with it.
Or a comic book.
Or a comic or something like that. As it stands, I'm just kind of—I literally fell asleep in this 20-minute episode.
You know what these are? These are Star Trek motion comics,
basically. So
yeah. I won't disagree that the animation is certainly a barrier to really enjoying the show, but
and I like shows with old animation too, because I mean I love, you know, old Super Robot stuff. I love the original Gundam.
But in this case, it works counter to
it does.
Immersion.
Yeah.
Rather,
I mean, a lot of the art itself is really good. I mean, the backgrounds are amazing.
Yeah,
that's the counterpoint, though.
The backgrounds look like they are actual matte paintings they would have worked as matte paintings in the original series.
Basically.
And because it's animated, the designs are allowed to get way more out there than the original series ever had.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the more alien-looking shows we've had.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no aliens with funny noses in this series. Multi-armed squids and bird people and...
And they barely even had funny noses in the original series anyway, because budget.
Yeah. This is one of the more fantastic Star Trek series in terms of design.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Because some of these creatures, I mean, most of these creatures, almost all of these creatures, you never would have seen in the original show.
Yeah. So there's cons, but there's also pros, too.
Yeah.
It's just, again, I fell asleep during the episode in the middle of the day. After
true,
a full night's rest.
True, but I think that's more the fault of the plot than the...
Right, because the second episode I actually liked. But moving on to this, they go down to a new planet, and then they just leave Sulu by himself to promptly get poisoned by one of the local wildlife. Then some horrifying...
Well, he should have known better than to pick up a little plant that basically acts like a spider.
Yeah, basically.
Remember last week how we were talking about how Sulu's not very good at his job?
Yeah.
Apparently, he's not good at this either. He's not good at not touching weird alien animal things.
And keep in mind, he's the one who gets his own starship.
Oh, dear.
Sometimes you fail upwards.
Just ask Janeway.
Oh.
Sulu, the Janeway of the Excelsior.
Oh.
Oh, damn. So anyway, some horrifying tentacle monsters give Sulu some dew. And
I like how
it's rain.
So Sulu's here convulsing and dying from toxic shock syndrome.
Right.
And was like, well, I've got some aspirin in this syringe.
Let me stick that in and see if that
I'll
it's not gonna cure
stick
him,
it in
but...
see if it does anything.
It's not going to cure him, but it might make him live longer to suffer more. So I'll do that.
No, it didn't do anything.
Seeing if any of the antidotes will work, okay, we'll just keep pumping stuff in until, find one that maybe might work.
Or he dies, you know, whichever comes first.
Well, he's gonna die anyway, so.
And so, while they're all watching McCoy torture Sulu as he's dying.
Starfleet medical science.
Did the artichoke aliens sneak up behind them? And they're like, hey, hold up, we can cure him. Let me stab him with my finger. And McCoy's response is, oh, hold up here. I'm the one that does medicine. Back off, let him die.
And Kirk's like, he's going to die otherwise. God damn it, Jim. God, this is really hard to follow because
All right, I'm stepping in then.
I'm so disinterested in this episode.
Tag me. Tag me in.
Tag. You're it.
So Kirk's like, I thought this planet was deserted. Where the shit did you come from? The response is, oh, we hid because we're scared of aliens. Which, okay.
Out response.
That's fairly reasonable, actually.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So Kirk's like, okay, well, where's everyone else at? Oh, I'll take you to them. Come to our mausoleum.
I'm kind of reminded of is, you know, the episode of Dragon Ball Z with the fake Namek?
I don't remember that one.
It's a filler episode when they were on their way to Namek. It just kind of reminded me of that. It's just stringing them along. Like, you really shouldn't go down that tunnel, but, oh, well, there you go.
Well, the Botanica aliens take them to their hall of corpses.
Oh, that's what she, that's where she landed!
Yes, shit! It is.
Crap!
So, we're 4 minutes into this cartoon, and we've already seen about a dozen dead bodies lining the halls. So, sweet. I think that's kind of rad and exciting. I don't know about you.
Well, exciting.
So, rat, they're like, okay, so what killed everyone? Oh, well, a human came here and got us all sick with strep throat.
Smallpox blankets.
Now, I particularly like the writing here because they're talking about gram-positive bacteria and they're using big science-y words you don't hear in cartoons very often.
Yeah, this is the episode Koenig wrote, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Good job.
And when is the last time you heard the word staphylococcus in a cartoon?
Well, I don't think you really get away with that these days, because, you know.
Yeah, there's the BSAP. So while they're here, you know, marveling at these rotting alien plant corpses, some squiddlybug fairy dragons show up to cause issues.
Yeah, those certainly do look like plant life.
It's like Lisa Frank fucked Warcraft.
Well,
I'm just saying, like, if you need, you know, flying dragon creatures, but you're on a planet that's supposed to be, you know, plant life dominated, take some cues, make the wings more like leaves, and, you know.
Yeah, they're about as generic a filmation design as you can get.
Think snapdragons more than, really, you know, real like dragons.
It really does look like something He-Man would fight, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Or the original Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah.
Not sure, the real ones. The one with the monkey.
I'm sure Bravestar ran into these, too.
Bravestar.
So.
I wish JD were here.
I know.
No, I'm sad. We got to keep going. Mm-hmm. So the tentacle-raping dragons grab Kirk.
Because of course they do.
But except that's only a clever ruse. They really want Spock.
So
as they fly away with Spock, Kirk's like, okay, this is clearly a trick. Because he's Kirk and he can realize this.
Oh, yes, obviously. And then the biggest non-reaction of the episode. A giant man steps out, and they just like, oh, hi.
Yeah, the aliens respond that, oh, well, our master needs the perfect human being. Or the perfect specimen, or whatever. And then the master walks out, and he's a human being the size of a 5-story building.
Although initially, it doesn't really get that across because he's not in the same shot as the others.
Right.
So the shadows are down there.
No, it's understandable why Kirk didn't react to this, because he's Kirk. He's ready for it.
Yeah, sure. But Bones?
Well, he's a doctor, not a reaction person.
Yes, he is! I think that's half the reason he brings McCoy down there. Certainly not for his medical expertise.
Let me pump him full of drugs. Okay.
Anyway, so Giant McDickenheimer says, get off my lawn. And basically, Kirk and the crew members say, okay, well, see ya. Beam us back up. We'll just leave Spock down here to be tentacle raped.
I noticed the transformation effect they use for this cartoon is. It really replicates that 1960s special effects feel. Which I'm not sure what that says, but.
It means it didn't take a lot of effort.
Kirk tells Uhura to get a few lines of dialogue in and go to the library and look up everything you have on this Caniculus, whatever the hell his name is. So she goes to research while he tells Sulu to, let's blow up that building Spock's in from space.
That'll solve the problem, right? Except it's better than that, because they've fallen back on one of the greatest stupid things from original Star Trek. Set ship's phasers to stun.
Unfortunately for Kirk, this plant is completely phaser-proof. They shoot their beams at the building, and they stop like 100 feet above the building because...
Reasons.
Plants.
Yeah, sure.
All the chlorophyll just diffuses the phaser beam. There's just too many antioxidants.
Of course, if it did hit the building, not like you'd be able to tell.
Well, the building would be stunned. It wouldn't be able to resist them anymore.
Right.
They could have their way with that building.
Oh, yeah.
They could just enter it through any orifice that building had. No resistance. Set phasers to roofie.
Intro quote.
So Bones wanders in, and Kirk tells him, go prepare me some poison. By the time Uhura pulls up her Wikipedia entry on this scientist guy.
It's 1973, so it took a while.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the Wi-Fi is slow that far out.
So this scientist guy, Benicula, whatever the hell the name is, big surprise, eugenics wars. So
all the best things come from the eugenics wars.
All the best evil things do. But hold up. Weren't the eugenics wars like 200 years ago?
Curious.
At which point Kirk remembers, hey, he said he was the fifth. I bet he's the fifth version, cloned.
Of course. Perfect logic.
Mm-hmm. Spock would be proud.
Steel trap that, Jim Kirk.
But it also explains why he's giant, too, because everyone knows the clones increase in size every generation.
Right! Obviously.
That's the one thing science. They never actually address in the course of the episode.
They never do.
It's just taken for granted that, oh, well, I mean, he's a giant man. I mean,
and this never bothers them. They never mention it in the dialogue. It's
right.
Just kind of something that exists, and
mm-hmm.
Everybody's okay with that. Which, you know, I guess it's forward thinking, but you know.
I sort of suspect that the giant clones were a thing that Filmation themselves decided to do, and it was never in the script. Because.
Oh my god! I bet you're right! That
makes sense.
Yeah, because, like, everything in the dialogue points to that, like, they're just expected to be the same size as normal people.
So Walter Koenig just actually wrote a regular Star Trek script, and it wasn't interesting enough for a cartoon. So they figured, make one a giant.
They added tentacle rape dragons and giants and...
You know, Chekhov's sitting at home watching, like, this is not what I wrote.
That's more Scotty than Chekhov, I think.
Well, I can't do accents.
Nuclear Wessels.
Yes. Well, there are no V's in that sentence, so I couldn't do Wessels.
Use that as your starting point, you know. Did it work from there? Try and keep the same accent.
This is not the Infinite Vulcan.
This is not my Infinite Vulcan.
Oh, we're all terrible.
Yeah, in different ways.
No, I'm so good at this.
Well, not everybody can be a JD master of the accent.
Oh my god.
Although,
I
suspect JD's Chekhov would start sounding oddly like Borat a few lines in.
You mean like that one Go Ranger summary?
You mean like that awesome Go Rangers summary?
Yeah, the one Go Ranger summary.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
The only one.
Exactly, the one that we can't top, so why bother?
Okay, so Kirk's big plan is we're going to take this poison with us. You're going to beam us down to the planet, and then y'all are going to leave to trick them, make them think that we left. Because they're plants, and they're actually very stupid.
A steel trap.
So as they wander on the planet unchecked, because clearly plants feel like they're safe now because the Enterprise left, Kirk, Sulu, and McCoy discover their spaceship garden, I guess you'd call it. I guess this is where the ships from E.T. come from. Because they rode after these giant, bulbous, butt-plug-shaped spaceships. So as they sneak into the hangar, Kirk accosts one of the artichoke aliens from behind and just interrogates the shit out of him and find out that the alien wants Spock because he's the perfect being.
But hey, it's cool, dudes. We'll take you right to him. You can go see him right now. Just come with us. No, it's fine. Come with us. We'll go right there.
So they get on their flying magic carpet. I don't know what the hell that thing is.
It's a guitar pick.
Sulu comments that the walls here are 100 times denser than lead. Which doesn't really sound that impressive, because... But anyway, halfway through the tunnel, the aliens turn off the light switch and summon their fairy dragons.
Wait, you mean it was a trap?
Apparently it was. Now, as lame as that is, I still kind of like the animation of them running in the dark. It's cheap and not very well done, but it's still kind of unique of running in terror in the absolute darkness where you can't even see the characters. It's not really like see animated in any show. I mean, even done poorly, it's still something you don't see.
Yeah.
And I'll give them some credit for being different. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
So they make it out of the tunnel and into the laboratory where they encounter a giant eugenics man. And he introduces his new creation...
The Jolly Green
Giant. The Infinite
Vulcan. Oh.
Yes, the Jolly Green Blooded Giant. With the real Spock's body lying on a table. It's about this point that Kirk has had enough of their shit. So they all put on their gas masks, and they start spraying some Roundup all up in this joint. So they kill all their pets. There's a glorious animation error where it shows Spock's body up and walking around holding his mouth coughing.
Wasn't that just the giant one?
Was it?
Yeah.
Was this before or after the floating head of Sulu?
before, I think.
Sulu's bad about keeping his head attached to his body.
Well, it wasn't in the script, so they had to improvise.
McCoy brags about his great-granddaddy's killing poison.
Yes, I'm sure he found lots of uses for that in the South in, you know, the 19th century or thereabouts.
He sure did know how to mustard gas a lot of krauts.
That's not where I was thinking, but that works too.
So, Spock's body, original body, is dying because his brain has been beamed into giant Spock's body.
Man, Spock's really bad about keeping his brain in one place.
Yeah, well, it's just so big. I mean, it slips out easy.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my.
Apparently, this brain transfer process has left Spock a little muddled. So Big Spock, that has Spock's brain, is just kind of out of it. So Kirk is using his Kirk command voice to command Spock to think and realize what's going on. That's an order, mister.
Now, of course, also, this is where the guy, the evil plan breaks down, because if they need to transfer the brain from the original to the clone, how is he going to get an army of giant Spocks?
Well, it's fortunate he doesn't actually have to do that, because his whole plan for the giant army for a peacekeeping force is kind of moot since the galaxy's already at peace.
Except for the Klingons and the Romulans. And...
well, there's treaties between them. They're not really fighting.
Not this week.
They're not fighting until the plot requires it.
Right.
But generally, the universe isn't as dangerous as it was back in the Eugenics Wars.
Where? Yeah.
Well, and whose
fault was
that?
Back before there was a universe to explore. So as a last-ditch effort to reason with Super Spock, Kirk throws his communicator up to him and commands Uhura to read the Wikipedia entry for this dude's plan out. And there's this... I just love the shot of giant Spock holding a tiny communicator in his hand like it's a jelly bean.
And see, that's kind of that's the thing, too, where it's like, I don't think the script ever called for this.
And the throwing animation is hilarious, too. It looks like it's just a slow... it's just a slow underhand toss.
But yes, the horrible illogic of this plan as it's read out seems to awaken Spock.
Wait, this is nonsense. So we'll see what happens here. There's some action, and as the plant aliens try to...
action!
Yes.
We use that term very loosely here.
So, about the time Giant Spock comes
it
to...
it is about as... well, I will say it's about as convincing as original series fights.
That is a fair point.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'd say that.
Okay, well, Giant Spock has come to his senses and come out of the clouds now, and he says, stop fighting, because this kind of negates your whole peace has already happened argument. That's illogical and shit. And I don't know how to solve this problem. And we get the setup for Wrath of Khan. Or the end of Wrath of Khan, at least. Where Spock copies his brain into original Spock's body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what this episode gets cool is that this leaves Giant Spock alive.
Never to be heard from again.
Which is kind of insane.
Yeah.
That's the insane part.
Somewhere out there.
Like, in any other Star Trek episode, what would have happened to Giant Spock?
He'd be dead.
Or unmade, or never happened.
Or sent off to on some other ship to show up in another series.
Yes! But no, somewhere out there in the galaxy, there's probably still a Giant Spock.
Oh my god.
And I love that.
While poor regular Spock got stranded in another universe that sucks.
Well, to be fair, before that, he just got stranded in a movie that sucks.
And on the plus side, the real universe still has Super Spock.
Yeah.
He's just like Spock, but 10 times his size.
10 times the logic.
Yes.
10 times the logic. He's extreme Spock.
Theoretically, by this point, we could be up to Spock 3 or even 4, too.
Oh, shit. Imagine how big he'd be then.
Ladies.
They just strap 2 nacelles on his back and he's his own starship. The USS Fock.
Right around in his mouth.
So he's Mr. Bucket?
He's got a pocket full of 500 repeaters he just throws at targets.
And then we cast him under and throw away. There you go.
Cosmic Duck, I call on you to Photoshop this.
There's so much potential in this that has just gone untapped for the last 40 years, and it's terrible.
Oh, and now, and even worse, they never can visit it now. Alas, alack. This episode is a fitting tribute to the Leonard Nimoy.
So there you have it. There's the Infinite Vulcan. I like it.
Somewhere Spock lives. He just might be 50 feet tall.
Yeah.
And like I said, story-wise, it would have been interesting. It's just... Man.
There's things that work against it, yes. I will admit that.
Mm-hmm.
Cause, and it's like, and it's again, it's I'm not old, it's like, oh, it's old animation, yuck. Because again, you know, I love, you know, old 70s anime and stuff like that. I'll even watch, like, you know, 60s, like, freaking Gigantor or something. But, I don't know.
Well, it's Filmation. In Filmation,
yeah.
They're not very good animators. They're not. No. Never have been.
Nope.
They are really good at still drawing.
They are not Don Bluth.
No.
But that's about it.
They're not even Sunrise or Toei in the 70s.
I will
point out... If Don Bluth did animate the Enterprise, it would have scary headlights coming out of it chasing over small animals all the time.
Yeah.
I will point out that this episode is one of the few, or possibly even the only one that I remember anything from seeing as a child.
Also, one thing that I noticed is
How could you forget the giant Spock?
The giant Spock and the little, like, pink puffball plant spider thing.
That the end credits do not stay on screen for very long.
No, it's a cartoon.
Who gives a shit about who made this?
Yeah.
It's for children.
Like, You can barely even read the voice credits.
What did this air on? Syndication? Or was there something? I don't know. Early 70s?
Actually, I've got it pulled up here. Let's see if it says.
No, it was probably like NBC or something.
Yes, but when?
What do you mean when?
Like, it's obviously not a primetime show.
Oh.
Oh, what? It doesn't really say here where it was on. Hmm. Oh, NBC.
Okay.
So it stayed on NBC then.
Hmm.
It was probably a Saturday morning thing.
I guess.
Because, like, there's nothing there that would preclude
that. Saturday mornings
that.
At 10:30 a.m. Eastern.
Ah, okay. There we go. 11 years older than me.
It's kind of heady for a children's show at 10:30 in the morning.
It's Yeah. Can understand why it didn't last many seasons.
Like 1.5.
Yeah.
That half season is very weird. Like, why would they order, like, yeah, let's give us 5 more episodes and we'll call it a day?
It kind of reminds me, actually, of the end of X-Men Evolution. They had, like, a final 8-episode season.
Yeah, something like that.
In modern times, though, that seems, like, more normal. Like in 73? That seems kind of weird to me.
And I guess with Evolution, it was like, okay, we'll give you 8 more episodes because you're kind of serialized. We'll give you time to wrap the story up, and then you're out the door. With this, it's all episodic, and
they tend to commit shows for a longer period of time back then. Why would they just order, like, yeah, let's give us a, you know, 5 more episodes, 6 more episodes, whatever, and then why would they devote the resources to that?
Somebody
then?
Felt bad for Ron Perry. I don't know. So we're going to have to cancel another show. The Star Trek thing ain't going to work.
And then 5 years later, hey, movies.
And then Firefly, The Next Generation.
Sigh. Although I think Whedon is well past his prime, so I'm not sure if I'd want that now.
No, you need a Rick Berman to come along and make things good.
Yeah. But
but
that would not happen.
The problem is that in that model, you would eventually come to Firefly Voyager, and then...
Firefly.
But you'd have Firefly Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I think this is a worthy sacrifice.
I wish I had enough awareness of that world to know whether Firefly Deep Space Nine had any legs.
It probably would.
We go with like a planet, and you know, like at the beginning of say, not the beginning of Serenity, when they go down to when you know one of the more populated planets, you know, just use that as kind of a hub.
Okay. Anyway, enough about a terrible Firefly.
I think that would just be more like Babylon 5, though.
Ultimately. It might. But okay, but ask yourself this: if you have to have Voyager and Enterprise to get DS9. I think I'd have Voyager and Enterprise to get the S9.
Well, especially since I like, you know, at least half of Enterprise.
Plus, you can always ignore Voyager.
Ignore.
Where it's you are annoyed by it and you ignore it at the same time.
Ignored.
There's some comment about Paladin in that, but I can't quite put it together.
It's like on the tip of your tongue.
I'm sure if I ignore it for a while, it'll come to me.
After we're done with the show,
and then I'll never remember it again when we're recording. As you do,
and then you'll remember on Twitter and then forget about the next show.
Glad to see some things never change.
Yeah. Sad thing is I don't even remember what it was. I don't remember anymore.
Fuck.
But hey, we got another episode to do, so Mickey.
Yes.
This one's actually good.
This one is actually good.
Yeah. Because the fact that it's everybody speaking in monotones works when you're completely on Vulcan the whole time.
Which is another interesting thing. We're completely on Vulcan the entire time.
Yeah.
Not completely.
Oh, mostly. For what matters. But I like how randomly the setup is. It's like, oh, we found a... how's it described it? Let's see here.
What's the Guardian?
Because oh, yeah, that's right.
It is, but they don't, like, refer to it
It's kind of just
assume
like,
that you know.
Assume that you know from the series that aired. How many years ago had it aired at this point?
And it just slipped my mind, too, because you're right. But it just kind of throws you in there. It's like, we're in orbit around the planet around the planet of the time vortex. It's like, oh.
Like, I kind of want to think there was an issue of...
The focus of all timelines of our galaxy. It's just there.
It feels like there's an issue of, if they said Guardian of Forever, they would have had to pay more royalties.
To Harlan Ellison?
Yeah.
And fuck that dude.
Yeah, right. They do call him the Guardian later in the episode, though. I forgot about that. But just take the episode on its own context. You have this really episodic cartoon... And, oh yeah, there's this time vortex. Don't you know about it? and it speaks.
Now, to be fair, though, I think they probably rightfully assume that a bunch of Star Trek nerds would be watching this and they would already know.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, I think...
But again, is it a wonder it only lasted a season and a half?
Well, for the return they were getting, it probably wasn't worth what it was costing Filmation to, you know, slideshow it.
And the voice
It wasn't
actors.
Worth the $1.25 they paid Filmation to make this.
Right, it wasn't worth the voice actors either.
And the quarter they spent to make it. Funimation made a whole dollar an episode.
What was 1973? That was a lot of money then.
They could buy like 6 tanks of gas.
Ooh, oh my god.
Right, so, yesteryear. Mickey.
Oh, am I doing this one too, huh?
You were going to do this one in the first place. It's your own fault that you stepped in over Ken on the...
Well, Ken was busy being terrible.
Yeah.
And not giving the episode proper credit.
Anyway, down on the planet, we can all just kind of, you know, move through it. Kirk in a red shirt. And Spock pop out of the vortex. But,
Wait. You're missing something really important here. Part of the Federation research team doing, you know, studies at the Guardian of Forever, one of them is literally just a bird man.
It's Nibbler from the Pirates of Darkwater.
I was glossing over that as much as the episode was, in fact.
But that's a great part, though. Like, that's just there, and nobody pays any mind, because, like...
Well,
that's
in
the
fairness,
Star Trek universe.
Nobody really pays much any mind, except for, you know, people acting really racist towards Spock here. What's a Vulcan doing here?
Yeah, it feels like there should have been more to that just kind of got dropped.
So yeah, like Bones doesn't recognize him, and Kirk's just like, "Oh, you're just fucking with him."
Oh, Bones, you cad.
Douchebag.
Also, like, next to the bird man, there's this dragon lady.
Yeah.
Who is more horrifying than the bird man is.
Well, the bird man's not even horrifying. It's just, like, you know, Big Bird's alien cousin. There's not really a problem there.
And so they get back up to the Enterprise, and Scotty's like, a Vulcan. And again, it's just like, dude, what the hell happened?
Wait. Back when Kirk first steps out of the portal, one thing I love is he says, "Ah, we're back. We made extra care not to change anything in the past, so everything's gonna be exactly the same as we left it. We didn't change a goddamn thing this time."
Yes.
Go
sure.
Us. And the first thing that is, who the fuck is Spock?
And you just think Kirk's mind is Spock. Like, oh. God.
It needs Kirk and his mom right there in that scene.
No dialogue, just silent facepalm. It would have been better if, like, Bones cut him off in the middle of saying that.
Yes.
What is this folks doing here? And so Scotty's very confused, and he's like, my first obstacle will be treated with respect. And then this other dude steps out, and he's like, no, they've always been respectful to me. What's up?
Random Andorian.
Yes. Does he I'm
Andorium.
Sure he has... Okay. First Officer Randorium.
I'm sure he has a name.
Oh, it's Star Trek. I'm absolutely sure he has a name.
And Andorian would be like the most irritating first officer. He'd fight you on everything.
Well, I mean, in Enterprise, even the Vulcan first officer fought on everything.
That's just because she was a bitch.
I mean, there's not that much difference between them, except for, like, the skin color.
And the hose is coming out of his head.
You know, no,
it
have those
it looks pretty much like Spock's animation model as an Andorian. that's what it is. They colored it gray and gave it little antenna thingies.
I think.
My God, it is Spock's animation model.
I think calling it an animation model is a little charitable.
It's an animation sketch, a rough idea.
Yeah. It's like, okay. Here's the template, and it's got these details in it. Just copy this 5 times. And for this one, flip it the other way.
Okay, it's Ravage box art. It's Spock's Ravage box art as an Andorian. There.
So you know, in theme with nobody ever really reacting to anything in this show, they just kind of casually go to sit down and talk about it.
And then that would be great, too, if this had been a live-action episode and the Andorian First Officer was just Nimoy in Andorian makeup.
Oh. Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, too, because Spock and the and Randorium are never on the in the same shot at the same time, almost. I think, like, even the shot of the table shows the Andorian from the back of his head.
Oh, wow. That's totally doable, then, isn't it?
It's almost okay. Like they shot it like as if it was a body double playing him. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry. There is a shot with both of them. I'm sorry. I was wrong. But
if it's just one, I mean,
if it's just one, they can spare one composite.
Yeah.
So, this table scene where they're discussing the problem, that is a total Next Generation conference room scene.
It is.
That's not something the original series would have done. They've done that around the captain's chair in the original series.
I mean, the original series had a few conference table scenes.
But that wasn't the go-to for discussing things.
Not really.
The menagerie was pretty much one long conference table scene.
But in a completely... Well, it was a different style, though. I mean, there was events...
There were more turtlenecks in the menagerie.
So regardless...
Like, the original series went to the conference room when they had, like, guest characters to involve in the talk. When it was just the bridge crew, it was just around the captain's chair.
So they're sitting around chatting about it, and they pull up some information on Sarek, and apparently he and his wife separated after their son died, who was Spock.
Oh.
And then the weirdest thing is, like, it zooms in on the Andorian, and he looks around all shifty-eyed like he did something. But they... Then they cut the commercial break, and they never follow up on it.
Well, it's because the Andorians are like, oh, shit, I'm really not supposed to be here, am I? I'm about to get negated out of existence.
Like, how do we replace you? And nobody cares. Like, whatever, dude. And you can tell when they zoom in on them, that is Spock's.
No expense was spared in the production of this episode.
They spent 15 whole cents. It's going down. Soon enough, it'll be the cost of your mom.
So wait, they only made 85 cents on making this episode? Because they had to spend 15 cents to put Andorian makeup on Spock's animation model?
Well, no. 15 cents for the episode. The cost of it's going down.
Oh, okay.
$1.25.
So they actually made like $1.10.
Yeah, so far.
Okay.
Okay, so they've realized that somehow history got changed.
Yes.
And they're just going to believe their captain and this Vulcan that showed up.
Well, of course they're going to believe their captain. He's their captain.
And he's Kirk.
He will punch them if they don't.
Possibly with two fists.
Yeah.
Over the back of the head.
It's not like, you know, Scotty's making this claim where you can just, you know, laugh him out. Go back to your whiskey, you drunk. No, this is Kirk. This is important. So they decide maybe we should go back down to the planet and visit the time travel machine.
Machine.
Whatever. Is it a machine or is it a person? I don't know.
It's a rock.
It's a big rock.
Batman when you need
them. All right, so I love this part right here where they're questioning Birdman and Dragon Lady about, so when we were traveling back in time to the Orion place, what were y'all doing? Oh, well, we were looking at Vulcan from 20 or 30 years ago. But that's not related to what happened to Spock, is it?
You know, there's a good question to be asked with this. Why were they using this all-powerful, all-knowing rock that can tell you things from, like, all through history to the dawn of time? Why were they using it to look at Vulcan 20 years ago?
I think they were just using it as a test. Like, okay, this is something you know. Let's go back and make sure everything's...
See, I'm assuming it's because the Dragon Lady has got a major crush on Spock. Therefore, she was researching his childhood to know how to best hit on him.
Ooh, fan
like, she's going to study his saber-toothed tiger pet and, like, have one just like it to remind him. and then he'd fall in love with her, and then he'd leave the Enterprise, and they'd go have lots of babies.
So, basically, the Guardian of Forever is Facebook.
Yes.
Or MySpace.
Well, that's old silly. Nobody uses MySpace.
1973!
They use it in space.
Spacebook.
Get it?
My space.
See, it's a clever play on words. That's the type of humor you expect from superhero time.
Yes!
None of this tawdry toilet humor.
Spare no expense! I think we're down to about 10 cents in cost.
We spared no expense, just like Filmation.
Filmation presents Superhero Time.
Yeah, we didn't pay a damn thing.
So, I kind of love that their plan here is, okay, well, we need to fix this. Spock, we're going to tailor you some nice clothes and boot your ass to the portal alone. Have fun!
You're skipping over the best part, though, where Spock just thinks back to his childhood and puzzles out the entire plot of the episode, like, 7 minutes into it.
Well, it's logical.
Ah, so, I must have traveled back to the past and saved myself from being killed. Get me some new clothes.
Yeah, he comes up with that.
We'll
one
have the ship to take
like,
may come.
Okay, think about it, though. If it was any other show, even like a different Star Trek show, the whole thing would have been, you know, we need to go back in time and try to figure out what happened and stop you from being killed. They wouldn't have like just started out with, okay, so I went back and saved myself.
Spock doesn't have
that
time
been
for that
figured
shit.
Out. That would have been
Spock
figured out.
Spock realizes the paradox at the beginning of the episode instead of the very last second of the episode.
Yeah.
And he just rolls with it. Okay, cool. I know what we're doing now.
Here's the clothes. I'm out, bitches. Hope you like having this job. You won't have it anymore.
And Dorian.
And Dorian. Get the fuck out of my clothes.
Yes, that is very cool that they wrote it so Spock immediately knows what the trope is, and he's just like, okay, well, shit, this will be easy. I know exactly what I have to do. There's no mystery here.
All right, let's hit it!
And that's kind of the great thing about this episode, too. Like, by dispensing with that from the beginning,
it lets him focus on the details of...
Yeah, you can just explore Spock's past, then.
Yeah.
More than the original series ever did, really.
It works really damn well.
It does! You know, besides the terrible child actor that they decided to cast a real child for, apparently.
Well, to be fair, have you ever talked to a child before? A lot of them sound like they're a bad actor, just the way they normally speak, because they're bad at it.
But that isn't entertaining either.
But it's very natural.
Yeah.
I guess.
If a child's speaking is irritating you, it's a very realistic portrayal.
So, yeah, I would tend to agree with that.
Okay, I'll see your point there. I cannot argue that.
This next scene is interesting. In that, basically, they lifted this shit and put it in the Star Trek Alternate Universe movie. Where Vulcan kids are dicks.
Yeah, basically.
They're logical bullies, basically. And apparently that's been canon for quite a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Aha, I mean, look at the half-breed Spock. He has emotions.
Isn't asshole an emotion?
Apparently not. Not by Vulcan standards. Or else they wouldn't really get anywhere in the universe. Because Vulcans are dicks.
No matter which universe you're in, if it has pointy ears, it's an asshole.
But...
Star Trek, check. Lord of the Rings, check. Warcraft, check.
Basically elves.
Yeah.
Vulcans are space elves.
Fucking elves.
A million Trekkies descended on me and tore me limb from limb.
So of left. Course Romulans are space elves as well.
Oh, they exist. They're hiding.
They're also dicks.
Waiting, lurking.
Right, but like the Romulans own being dicks. Like, it's deeply ingrained in their culture to be dicks, where Vulcans try to pretend they're not.
The Vulcans are the space night elves, and the Romulans are the space blood elves.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, Warcraft.
Basically.
No, I'm saying blah, blah, Warcraft. The same way we say blah, blah, Pretty Cure, blah, blah, Digimon, meaning stop talking, Ken.
So, so about that Warcraft movie. I'm just kidding.
All right, so Spock stalks his former child self wearing a Speedo, which I don't know why all the Vulcan boys wear Speedos and, like, S&M harnesses. It's kind of alarming. But maybe it's a cultural thing,
wait,
and I shouldn't judge.
Are we watching Star Trek or Stronger?
Or just, or just general 70s anime?
When boys, Predators ruled Hollywood.
Maybe that's just a school uniform or something.
I think that might be worse.
Well, Vulcan's supposed to be like miserably hot. Maybe it's just logical to be breezy.
Well, okay, I can see that.
In that case, though, why is Sarek fully clothed?
Because Sarek's an asshole.
That doesn't make any sense, Ken.
Well, doesn't he spend the whole episode inside where there's presumably air conditioning?
He meets Spock outside. Now, Amanda, she stays in the air conditioning the whole time because she's smart.
Yeah, I don't know that. Amanda's smart, but, No.
She's smart and possibly would die outside otherwise.
I just figured the fact that, you know, he's fully clothed just makes him more and more of a dick.
He's to wear pants.
Right.
He's miserable. He just makes him more and more
I'm miserable when I have to wear pants, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm miserable. Right now.
Sarek sneaks up on Spock. What are you doing? I'm your cousin. I'm just passing through.
Your cousin twice.
Your couch.
Which is not actually too far from what he actually says.
Wrong kind of passing through, Fort Max.
What?
He's just a Vulcan passing through. Remember that.
Oh, okay. I did not pick up on that music for a second there.
How can you not recognize that awesome decade music?
Because Fort Max.
That's not the first time Fort Max has played that.
Played?
That's the word I'm going with, yes.
It might be his audio quality. I wasn't sure what he was doing for a moment.
Yeah, so Spock basically tells his dad that, yes, I look very like you. And I'm sure
we must have an ancestor in common, being that I'm your cousin and all. Did I mention I'm your cousin from out of town?
Your cousin.
I'm sure my evil counterpart is around.
Very real around.
Punch Counter Spock.
What did Counter Spock ever do to you? Counter Spock wears a yellow uniform, too.
Yes! He just pays the goatee on.
Yeah, his shirt is just reversible. He runs around a corner and takes it off and turns it inside out and pays the goatee on.
It's our answer. He just slaps it on.
Fantastic. No, he doesn't even do that. He just has like a stencil of a goatee and a can of spray paint.
Oh, that's even faster. It's even better.
It's, you know, it's efficient and logical.
Of course. They'll never be able to tell us apart.
Maybe it's not even paint, maybe it's just like, you know, the spray on flocking.
Yes.
That way you get the texture, too.
Except
one day McCoy would find the can and replace it with the spray-on, like, granite texture.
Reveal him for what he is.
I mean, having a stone beard would be awesome.
Then McCoy has to punch him in the face, and it breaks his hand. And
the only thing more cool than a stone beard would be, like, a beard made of fire.
That might... not work out.
No, that would be cool. That'd be hot.
That might not work out. Oh, damn.
All All right. About the time Filmation realizes, oh yeah, this is a cartoon. We better do something cartoony. So,
what, you Charles mean standing around talking for 10 minutes isn't cartoony?
Well, we should probably have cartoon Spock hang out with his pet Baloo the bear.
Freaking hell!
This is some Hair Bear Club nonsense.
It is geriatric cringer.
Damn.
What is this animal doing on planet Vulcan? I do not believe this.
Yeah, apparently that's part of their wildlife.
You don't sound very certain. That's not very certain saying that, XP.
I mean, they talked about this in the original series.
Did they?
Spock's pet Sellot.
Did they ever characterize it as looking like a big dopey saber-toothed tiger?
Okay, so the way it went down was, like, Spock's mother was telling McCoy about it, and I think Spock made the comparison to it being like a teddy bear. And then when McCoy was going to give him shit for having a teddy bear as a kid, Spock then pointed out that it's a teddy bear with 6-inch fangs.
Ah, okay. Well,
okay,
points
well.
To them then.
Well, I mean, DC Fontana wrote this episode, and she would, you know, be familiar enough to call back to that. She may have wrote that episode of the original series, too. Not super up on that.
Well, that's interesting. At least this thing isn't just some cartoon made-up nonsense.
I mean, the appearance is cartoon made-up nonsense, but
the... but the concept is not.
Yeah. So anyway...
Ken?
I cut out there for a second. The hell were we?
We just met Geriatric anyway. Cringer.
Damn, we've been that far back in the episode still?
I thought you liked this episode.
What's that?
I thought you liked this episode.
Oh, we did. It just seems like it's taking a lot longer than I remember it was when watching it.
That's because we're talking about things in it.
Oh, because
it's a good episode.
Shit, where was Geriatric Cringer?
12 minutes in.
Ah, there we go.
So we're actually like halfway.
Okay.
Ken?
Buffering, I'm sure.
Buffering.
Thanks, Netflix. Thanks, Netflix Obama.
So, yes, little Spock's going out for his rite of passage, I guess.
Is he his foreskin cut off?
Sarek's trying to prepare him, you know, to make the choice to take his rite of passage on. But that won't be until next month.
Right. But he goes out anyway. And Geriatric
Cringer. Spock's like, wait a sec, what day did I come back on? Did I get this right?
Like, oh, shit.
And yeah, and of course the whole thing with, yeah, it's your own choice to take it, but I will be very disappointed if you don't.
Basically.
So, Sarek was talking to him like a parent.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So, little Spock heads out, and, old Spock ends up following him, while Sarek and Manus hit around like, does that guy seem strange to you? This cousin I've never heard of or met or...
We'll go call someone to go find him and completely drop this plot point.
Yes. So meanwhile, Spock sneaks up on the sound of a stock Godzilla roar. Which, that is exactly what that is.
Didn't Filmation make a Godzilla cartoon?
Up from the depths, 30 stories high. Yes, they did.
Well, there you go.
Or was that Hanna-Barbera? Was that Hanna-Barbera or Filmation?
That probably was Hanna-Barbera, I believe.
Actually, yeah.
I'd have to look it up, sure, but...
Yeah, with the stupid animal psychic, it had to be Hanna-Barbera. So anyway, Spock just, as Geriatric Cringer gets his ass kicked, Spock leaps on the thing and, you know, I'm not sure if it implies a, you know
full
nerve pinch or whatever.
Ken.
But it looks more like he breaks his neck.
No, I think it was supposed to be a nerve pinch.
It is, but
because like that was the whole crux of young Spock, because the kids were teasing him because he couldn't even do that yet.
Right. It looks like a nerve pinch. It's implied to be the nerve pinch. It's supposed to be a nerve pinch, but
it looks like he's strangling it to death. Yes.
Yes, it looks like he breaks the damn thing's neck.
Probably had animation of strangling a neck that they could just trace over.
Right.
It is a pretty badass moment for Spock, at least. Unfortunately, Geriatric Cringer has been clawed by the thing. And will die shortly if he doesn't get medical attention. Now, they can't bring him back because that would take too damn long. So what is the logical thing to do? Go back and get medical attention. And to bring there. Even though you have to travel both ways. And regardless.
Well, okay. Have you ever tried to drag something the size of a gorilla through the desert?
No, that's true.
That shit will slow you down.
Yeah, sure.
Also, plus, his space Wookiee dog has been poisoned, and I imagine dragging him around isn't going to be good for keeping the poison still.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Because apparently Vulcan is space Australia.
I mean,
so it's where Fort Max is from.
Yeah. Wow.
So Fort Max is a Vulcan.
That explains so much.
More than it doesn't, yeah. No, but I mean, you've seen what Vulcan's depicted to look like. Australia seems about right.
It does, yeah. So what is with their obsession with tentacles, I wonder? Because little Spock has to run through some of those to get home.
It's because tentacles are easy to animate. You can draw some squiggly lines, and it doesn't really matter if they don't line up with anything.
That's a good point.
So little Spock makes it home.
Tentacles also don't require any creativity.
Somebody brings a medical attendant in a big flying pink craft.
It's a Cadillac. A Vulcan Cadillac.
Yeah.
Because he's a doctor. He can afford those things.
Sure.
It makes perfect sense. I also like that when little Spock runs up to his door, he's like, "You're Spock. Aren't you known for, what do they call it, practical jokes?" That was 2 years ago.
Little Spock was a shit.
Vulcans never forget.
I want to know what the practical joke he pulled was, though.
He probably put some place on another paper or something.
Anybody get what Mickey just said?
Nope.
Damn.
So are you better?
I said he banged your mom with a rusty spoon.
Damn.
Oh, okay.
So they head back to Cringer and Spock in the big pink space dildo.
It's a Cadillac.
I'm pretty sure it was a dildo.
Not in here, mister. It's a Mercedes.
Ken, if that's what you think a dildo looks like, I think you probably need to go see a doctor.
Perhaps
a dildo doctor.
Well, No. He needs to see a doctor because I'm concerned about what he might have been inserting up there. He may have done some damage, you see.
Oh, dear. Regardless, so the doctor says, it's too late. Oh, so that entire run was pointless.
Well, not really, because while the doctor's working on the cell, Spock is telling younger Spock that, yeah, it's sad when something dies, but, you know, there's a time to mourn, but only if the life was lost as a waste and your pet saved your life, so its death isn't a waste.
Right. So they euthanize him.
Yes, because the doctor gives him the choice, well, we can prolong his life and he'll be in horrible pain, or you can let him go.
And holy shit, that is some heavy shit to drop into a cartoon for a Saturday.
It really is. It really is.
The second episode!
Let's discuss euthanasia in our children's broadcasting.
Yeah!
And let's be for it.
Yeah.
How the fuck did they do that? Like, one, first of all, they're openly discussing death at all, period. Not going to another dimension.
The next dimension! Sorry.
But yeah, Spock, let your pet live in horrible pain or kill it forever.
So back home, he says he had a choice to make, and he chose the Vulcan way, basically. Also, my cousin taught me this bitchin' move.
I can't wait to go show it off to all the kids at school.
Which is almost exactly what he says, too.
Yes, exactly.
I like to think that, you know, Spock taught him by demonstrating on the Doctor, and they just left him laying out there in the desert. While they took his car to go home.
I like how after the early scene, like, Sarek doesn't, like, question him at all or find it any of this story peculiar. And just like, yo, you're cool now.
Yeah, well, and right before they peel off in his space Cadillac, adult Spock leans out the window and yells, "This is a practical joke." And then they speed off into the sunset.
Yes! That's my headcanon.
And
as for delivering that is deadpan.
This is a practical joke.
Yes. Yes.
As for Sarek not questioning adult Spock anymore, you know, Vulcans don't lie.
I guess.
So if Spock is telling him this story, it must be the truth.
But if that was the case, then his initial story should have been true.
What do you mean?
That he was doubting?
That he was his cousin?
Yes.
Except Spock does lie because he's not completely Vulcan.
Exactly. He gets
Well, no. You see. When Spock tells Sarek that he's his cousin, he is because that's what he's supposed to be at that point in history.
Huh? So what he said was true from a certain point of view.
Oh, God.
Yes, from the point of reference of that moment, that was the truth.
That is some bullshitting, but okay.
That's a Vulcan for you.
Yeah, rules lawyers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vulcans are probably the best lawyers in the Federation.
Or the worst.
Like them and the Ferengi.
God.
See, we need a Star Trek court.
Defending you? Who do you want defending
buddy,
you?
Buddy cop between a Vulcan and Ferengi?
No.
We need a court procedural set in the Star Trek universe.
Yes. Which one would you want defending you, though?
Well, it depends. Because, if it's a matter of, a civil lawsuit over financial matters, obviously you want the Ferengi to be defending you. Because no one's more motivated to protect assets than the Ferengi.
Right.
No, actually, what it boils down to is, can you win with the truth? Then you want a Vulcan. Do you need a lie to win? You go Ferengi.
That's also true.
Yeah, you know.
That's also true. No, I was thinking, in some Star Trek series, they need to have a Vulcan as a ship's counselor.
Oh, that is the worst, best idea.
It really is, isn't it?
So they get back up. So Spock gets back. People recognize him. They get back to the ship. And McCoy's bitching him out about, needing to, give a medical exam, and he has to recap.
Before that is that, there was one small thing changed. A pet died.
Well, yes.
But Kirk's like, oh, that doesn't matter. To some, it does.
Invisible tear.
Yeah, because Filmation can't be bothered to animate it anyway.
So, and then McCoy's going on about needing to give me medical exams. He has to recalibrate the damn thing every time he, puts a Vulcan through it, and Spock's the only Vulcan on board. No credit.
Next, McCoy will have to install a wheelchair ramp for Pike.
I like how he completely forgets, the three-armed guy on the bridge now, but, whatever.
Well, he's not a Vulcan.
Yeah, but he's not human either.
That guy actually has the same physiology as a human, so, there's no adjustments to be made.
And anyway, Spock says, in another time and place, you could have to recalibrate for Andorians. And McCoy's all, is that some kind of joke? Because I shouldn't have to remind you Vulcans don't joke. And then Spock's all, times change, Doctor. Times change.
Next day, Spock walks in, sits in his chair, whoopee cushion.
As Spock plots to strand McCoy in a desert on the next planet they visit.
Well, can you blame him?
And that was yesteryear.
Yeah, it's pretty good, actually.
It really was.
Despite my summary may color it.
I think our summary
was one of the best episodes, so I'm afraid we got nowhere to go but down from there.
Unfortunately. But we don't have to worry about that for several more weeks.
Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm. And we know what we're doing next week.
Actually, we may not have to worry about it again.
Well, I wouldn't go that far for it, Max.
Yeah, ghosts could really suck.
And, you know, even if we start doing Dino Charge week to week again, doesn't mean we necessarily will stop doing this.
True.
We'll just split it into two separate podcasts recorded in the same night.
I mean, it's totally approachable. We usually spent like 2-3 hours just doing superhero time when we were doing all the shows.
Yeah, true.
So doing an hour of Star Trek and whatever we take to do a Dino Charge episode. And hey, we'll get Paladin back.
Yeah.
Probably.
I'm sure he'll be delighted.
Do Star Trek first, make him sit through it.
Don't give away the ending.
You don't have to put this in the show.
I won't remember to take it out.
Don't you have your notes?
I only put the important things in there, like Final Fantasy Shitter.
Yeah, since he doesn't have to censor us anymore, there's no reason to take detailed notes.
The only thing I write down anymore really is intro quotes. Also, I was just typing out the episode title Mickey suggested. Otherwise, I will forget that.
Oh, at the end, one thing we'll say that I just remembered at the end of The Infinite Vulcan, Sulu's wink was the most Filmation-y thing.
Well, now, that whole part, like, you know, Kirk's like, teach me that judo throw, and Sulu's all, I don't know, Captain, you have to be inscrutable for it. Sulu, you're the most scrutable man I know. What does that even mean? What does that even
dialogue,
mean?
That dialogue is inscrutable.
It's funny Walter Koenig wrote that, but, you know, Chekhov's just not even...
In the show?
Well, he wrote that just to screw with Takei.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Ali's more popular than me.
Now you sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I was thinking,
I am doing accent from foreign country.
Not
genetic accent from foreign country.
Old country.
No specific country, just old.
I miss JD. His indistinct European was always the best.
Can't quite measure up to that, yes.
No. So, we know what we're doing next week.
Yes.
More accents. No.
You want me to do somebody like these? Sorry, go ahead. What episode was it? I forget.
We're doing the Packlet episode where Geordi gets kidnapped.
What episode is that? Help!
You expect me to remember, like, a title?
Or an episode? You know, season? Something?
Cripes. I gotta do everything around here. You guys are helpless.
Samaritan Snare.
Yeah. I was just gonna search for Packwood, because how many
entries
do we
have? Season 2, episode 17.
Okay.
It's so wonderfully awful. Like most of season 2.
Now, when you say awful, is it entertainingly awful, or is it...
Let's put it this way. Put it this way. Mickey's in favor of it.
Oh, sweet. Can you tell who's tasting that? I trust.
Okay, everyone go to Google right now and Google Geordi kidnapped space retards.
All right, give me a sec here. I get a YouTube video as the first hit.
Yes, the very first thing that comes up is the Samaritan Snare. Google knows what you're talking about.
Star Trek Generation 2 retrospective.
Let's see. The first three entries are actually all pertaining to that. The fourth one is a Voyager episode, which, you know, is also Space Retards.
My first one is... Oh, no, it's the Memory Alpha page for Torres.
Ah. Close enough.
Close.
But yeah, most of these... Oh, a little ways down, playable pack lids for Star Trek Online.
Well!
Yeah.
Playable pack lids?
Oh, and if you go a little farther down, it's a link to a review of Planet Africa.
Oh, sweet.
I don't see that one, unfortunately.
Code of Honor?
No, it's not showing up on mine.
Yours is showing up porn links, isn't it?
Not yet. Not yet. Not surprised, actually.
You keep all that shit to Bing, don't you?
You gotta do it smart. Who's gonna use? Who's gonna look up me up on Bing? I mean, come on. What do you use Bing? Code of Honor.
That's so bad, it's good. I'm so glad we started this podcast with that episode.
Yeah.
It really set the pace for us.
Yeah. It defined us as a podcast.
Fuck.
It said, we're going to start a podcast talking about Star Trek, and what episode we want to talk about the most?
Mirror, mirror? Nah.
That's too easy.
In the pale moonlight? No.
No.
Eventually.
No, we want to talk about Code of Fucking Honor. God. I had blocked that out from my memory.
Really?
It's funny because in a way it's like...
Already?
No, I had blocked that out from my memory. Like the episode itself. I didn't remember it at all.
In a way, it's kind of like, it's still Star Trek, but it's approaching it from the complete opposite angle, because it still inspires discussion about race. Just...
For all the wrong reasons.
Yes. It's so blatantly racist, you can't stop and question racism while watching it.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is where we were in the late 80s. Can you imagine if that shit had aired today?
It never would make it. It never would make it to air.
With the internet, especially. Oh my fucking god.
No, I mean, like, the network would see what they were doing, too, and just, like, shut it down.
Right, obviously.
That's what Gene Roddenberry tried to do when he fired the director. It was just too late.
Yeah, because it was on syndication. If, you know, a network had been backing it, there would have been money, like, okay, scrap this whole thing, you're doing the next script in the batch.
Is that this season's going to be an episode short?
Or we'll have a clip show or something.
Yeah.
Episode 3 will be a clip show.
Well, no, you have the clip show later in the season to make up for the...
Episode 4 has half its special effects done.
Look, Mickey, this isn't Clerks the Animated Series.
Or Lost Galaxy.
Or Keeper Ranger Season 2.
Right.
Keeper Ranger Season 2.
Yeah, Star Trek The Next Generation should have started with a clip show.
Star Trek The Next Generation, but really most of The Last Generation. You guys remember V'ger, right?
Yeah, it's just a highlight reel from the movies.
Actually, whatever happened to V'ger? Did it blow up or did it leave?
It left.
I wonder where it's at.
Nowhere and everywhere.
It's hanging out with the cetacean probe somewhere.
Dun, dun, dun.
Lousy cetaceans.
All right, well, I think that's our show for this week, but we'll have a great Next Generation episode for you next time. I can hardly wait.
One that none of us will whine about having to watch. Right, Ken? Ken?
Are you paladining?
No, I was just seeing how long I could hold that.
That's what she said.
No, no. No, no. Oh!